My name's Johnny Hook. I'm a research associate. I work here in the Leica building in the Imagination Lab downstairs. And what I'm going to try and look at today with you is the idea of the democratization of data, which is something that wearables is the kind of latest thing that's lauded as the key to the democratization of data. So I'll have a quick look at what that is and then take you through some of my work and what I've learned from it. Okay, so the thing I'm really interested in is the sensors that build up these technologies. The development of sensors has been the driving force behind the development of wearables. And before that, movements such as the quantified self, which sought to use sensors to work out a lot about your body, things like your heart rate, skin galvanometry, like Trisha was looking at, breathing rate, temperature, anything like that. Following on to that, we got the Internet of Things, which sought to look at sensors, really to sense the environment around you. So again, you might get ambient temperature, air pollution, water quality, noise, things like that. And these two movements really brought a big kind of revolution in sensing. It brought a massive reduction in cost, for a start, and the miniaturization of these devices. So we get to sensors that are really quite tiny and are able to be embedded into things, which is really what enabled wearables to get off the ground. The whole idea of these sensors, of course, is to bring us data, allow us to collect it. And these new, cheap, small sensors meant anyone could go out, be you a scientist, artist, or whatever, and buy these things, collect your own data. And that's what this democratization is all about. It's about allowing people to have free access to things that they otherwise wouldn't. If you wanted to know what the air pressure was prior to these things, you'd have to talk to the Met Office. You'd have to go online and things like that. Now, millions of people all around the world have these devices themselves. They upload them to online communities. And that's what this democratization of data is all about. Going forward from that, we're now looking at people predicting the continued integration of these sensors into our everyday lives. People like Bruce Sterling are talking about BIOT, which is an entity that's kind of half person, half sensors, and that'll be in a position where you're able to control and understand all of your own living processes through perhaps a network of sensors on your body. And that will mean effectively the human condition is over. You'll no longer, get ill because you're able to control that. And, this is kind of 50 years from now, but it's the way things are going. It's going to be very powerful, and wearables is certainly a step in that direction. But if we return back to that term democratization, it's a bit of a loaded word, and it's one I'm not a particularly big fan of. It is obviously a political word, and like so many political promises, it doesn't always quite deliver. Democratization of data has been brought out before with things like Web 2, and it's generally been considered by academics as something that is not really a sufficient term for what we're talking about. Increasing the number of people with access to things through development of kind of sensors that people can buy is great, it's really positive and it's good, but it isn't democratic, it's not ubiquitous access. It doesn't mean everyone can have it. It generally favours, as does all technology, or most technology certainly, the kind of more well-off, tech-savvy people like the people in this room, and less so other people around the world. That's a well-established issue though, and that's not what I'm going to look at today. I have another problem with this idea of democratization that I'm going to look at through the window of some of my own work. So last year, or the year before perhaps, I had this idea of quantified personal space, which was basically taking bits of quantified self, which are these sensors that can look at your own body and how you're physiologically doing. The Internet of Things, which in simple terms is looking at the environment around you, and combine those to get this idea of quantified personal space, where I can look at the interaction and the interface between my body and the immediate world around me. And I think that's quite powerful, very important. And what I had sought to do was get some of these technologies, put them together, and look at some real world problems with them. Things like air pollution, for example. Air pollution is, and was at the time, very serious issue globally. We keep having these days in recent years where everyone goes on the news and says, don't go outside, pollution everywhere, it's going to kill you, wait till tomorrow before you go outside, particularly in the kind of southeast of the country. And these things are happening now about 5 times a year, and they're predicted to continue to increase. It's a really serious problem. In fact, they reckon that 30,000 people last year died prematurely due to pollution exposure in the UK. And we're not a country that is struggling with pollution. Some other countries are much worse. And we're looking at 7 million people estimated globally to have died due to pollution exposure. So this is a really serious problem. And it's one that people are looking at, but from my point of view, they weren't necessarily looking at it from the right angle. So if you think of air pollution, it's usually quite simple to measure. You just measure the pollution in the air, done. But that's not really the issue. The first problem with it is pollution sensors, like the local authorities and the government and the EU use, are incredibly expensive. It's not attainable for someone. They're the size of a shed and they cost tens or hundreds of thousands of pounds. It's not something I could buy, whack in the garden and see how the pollution is for me. The second issue is when that data is collected by the government bodies and the official authorities, it's given to us, as I showed a minute ago, in this kind of general 1 to 10 scale, with no indication of what that is. For all I know, 3 could be killing me, but it's green, so it must be great. But if the same people that are responsible for keeping us calm about pollution are the people making the map, then it's not very democratic, and we don't really know what's going on from this. The bigger issue, in my mind, though, was that as a human, from a purely selfish point of view, I'm not that interested in the general ambient pollution, especially at such a low resolution as this. What I care about is my own exposure to that pollution. And this is where that quantified personal space idea comes from. Your exposure is effectively to, say, traffic pollution, how much is there and how much of that you breathe in. And to be able to measure both of those will be a big step forward from the kind of general low density models of there's some pollution in the air that we currently get at great expense and then can't even access the data anyway. So being able to do that will be a massive step forward. And these small sensors are the kind of things that help us to do it. Okay, so the approach I used, I got one. This is actually for sulfur dioxide. The nitrogen dioxide one I use on a day was smaller. It's that one, but this is the kind of thing. It's easily embeddable into a belt, a bag, shoe, whatever. You could quite easily turn this into a wearable without too much ability, which was convenient for me. Secondly, there's the slightly less attractive breathing monitor. Now, this kind of slots over your face. I'll admit it's slightly more difficult to make this be a wearable, but I think we managed it. But again, this is current prototype technology. It's going to move forward. I can see this being in glasses or something on the bridge of your nose quite soon. So while it's not quite there yet, these are, real solutions, and they're very cheap, and they're very accessible, and they're very easy to use, which really is the key. So what we did, we put a little team together, developed a Android application, and we took in pollution data and airflow data for an individual walking round, combined it with some GPS data from a mobile phone, all quite straightforward, and spat out a map. And from that map, we could get these kind of tracks that will show you how much pollution, on a general scale, you're getting at different places, how frequent your breathing is, so whether you're kind of slowly respirating or really out of breath, as you can see I was after the small hill near the castle, athletic. And also how deeply you're breathing, which again, you can see was affected quite severely by the terrain. Those can be combined with a very simple equation to give you an idea of the exposure to pollution as you walk around. And if you know Lancaster well, you can see there's a high level pollution where you'd expect as you get into the kind of main traffic corridor. There's a lot less as you get down to the quay, and then there's a lot more here exposure, because even though there wasn't that much pollution, there was actually quite a hill there that I had to climb up, and it meant I was breathing more. And if you breathe twice as much, you're twice as exposed. Now this, in our minds, was brilliant. We thought, oh, Nobel Prize coming this way. Should probably polish my speech hat. And, you know, there's a lot of implications for the world. Firstly, this idea of democratization that we talked about earlier. Taking data that previously was greatly expensive and not available to the public, and giving you not only that data, but better data. Not only what pollution is in the air, but what you're taking in, directly sensed. That is a massive step forward. It can tell us a great deal about what people will do with their behavior. I'd be empowered to change my route to work, for example, to make it more easy, to reduce my own pollution intake. I'd have a great understanding of the world around me. You know, these things wouldn't be secret anymore. I'd know where I was polluted. I'd understand how pollution changes away from a road. And there could even be policy implications. Yeah, my parents-in-law live near, in a beautiful village, right behind a terribly large power plant. And when they sit in the garden, are they getting the beautiful village air or the nasty power plant air? They don't know. If they ask the Environment Agency, they'll probably say, oh, definitely village air, because they would have to pay to solve that problem. Now, with this kind of stuff, they could just sit in the garden and tell the Environment Agency what's there and make them sort it out. This is real implications. We're definitely going to be famous. But when we looked a bit closer at this map, we did start to notice a few things. Yeah, there's definitely a pattern that should be here with an increase in exposure, because I've walked up a hill and I was breathing more. But it looked a bit too much, and there's a few other places we started to question the quality of the data we collected. Hello. So to have a look at this a bit more closely, we got a guy down in Leck to put it in a lab and calibrate the sensors, and that's where they are right now. They're being looked at. But in fact, what we found was, so far, it's more than likely that most of the data we collected was actually just noise. Because Lancaster isn't that polluted, the pollution sensor isn't that good, and only when we got to the really highly polluted areas were we getting any data. So what? Well, as a scientist, collecting rubbish data doesn't make me look very good. I didn't get the Nobel Prize, I'm not rich and famous. It's not even published. It is very dangerous. As an artist, if you're producing something based on the output from a sensor, what are the implications for your work if the sensor's just outputting garbage? Okay? If we want to be citizen scientists, we need to be working with things that are of a suitable quality for science. If we want to be artists with these new digital media, we should, but we need to think carefully about what this stuff is. Otherwise, we're just getting a false power, and that's no good. It's like having a vote that doesn't actually get counted. Okay? To get the true power, we need to look at this stuff carefully and understand it. We need to know what the limitations are, and be able to use it with care so that we can harness this power without tripping up in the way I did. Thank you very much.